Whew, man, I am winded. Shannon and I just got finished having to break these two up. It was flying fireworks backstage.
I'm not gonna lie.
It was love. It's love.
Yeah. I'm finding his IP address right now. Damn it.
John landed a hell of a right hook before we even went on to the show. So
he did. Yeah, good. He didn't even like gloves yet, did he?
No, and debate's already over. It's done. Stu's been knocked out.
It's kind of like I imagine John and Steve in their underwear, nose to nose, like those fighters do at UFC.
Why would you do that? No, I don't want to hear the rest of that.
Because I have to look at things from every angle, Steve. That's my job. Okay,
not helping.
But welcome everybody. We're gonna have a hell of a show tonight, I think. I'm seeing Twitter. I put up a poll. I'm going to talk about it in just a second. But I put up a poll to see what people's thoughts were heading into this debate. And then afterwards, you guys can go there and vote on a second poll. And we'll kind of compare the results to see if anybody's viewpoints were swayed in either direction. But let's first say hello to everybody. And then we will dive into that. So my lovely co-host this evening, and I can... for the first time on this show, say lovely co-host is Shannon. Welcome, Shannon.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I very much appreciate being here. I'm excited.
I see your backdrop. I thought we asked for an unbiased moderator.
No, I'm not biased.
I'm kidding. And we will also say hello to John Perry. I'll of course introduce you guys officially when we get to the topic. But just as casual, stating casually. Hello, hello, John. Welcome back.
Hello, hello. It's good to be here.
So Steve, I think you should tell people about you being in Twitter jail if they don't know.
Sure. And first, I just want to say that he stated clearly, but I'm stated correctly. So let's get that out of the way.
Okay.
I'm in Twitter jail for another 6 days because I guess I can't say there was Mr. Andrew that reported me, but somebody reported three of my tweets that I had to delete, and it gave me a 7-day timeout. One of which that because I'd asked without a crystal ball to write about this particular topic, I guess I was quote unquote silent voice. Is the terminology they used. So I'm in Twitter jail for another 6 more days.
Yeah. So you know what that means? That means all those people that said that you were trying to censor them in the live chat and all that, they're correct. You are trying to silence voices.
Clearly. Yeah, except that my voice got silenced because of reasons. It's okay.
Right,
I mean,
ironic.
You know what's nice, though? I've been really mellow since I haven't had any dumpster fires on Twitter, right? It's a calming
Yeah,
effect.
Me too. It's weird. It's almost like
I know people
Twitter
are bored now.
Dumpster fire anymore. I wonder why.
Yeah, like, what happened to Twitter? It's no fun. Where's Steve?
Let me talk to Dave for a second. Dave,
sure.
The picture that I sent earlier for our north of the screen, throw that up really quick.
Yeah,
oh. Andy.
Yeah, just a second. I'll get that up.
Because today is a special day in Canada, and so I thought it would be nice to wish you all a lovely Thanksgiving. It's odd to think that we're so close, but yet you guys are celebrating a holiday a month early. I mean, this is not supposed to happen, eh?
you guys celebrated a month late, is I think what you mean to say, but all right.
Is it just like down here, Shannon, like you do the big dinners and lunch, and then everybody go and run over everybody and shopping? It's over.
There's not as much running over each other to go shopping because everything's closed today. But we all have a big dinner and watch football. The CFL has a bunch of big games going on today. So, you know, we have a football league, right? We have our own. No. We need turkey and ham. And
you can take that, Dave. I imagine Canadian football to be like a bunch of time they bump into each other going, oops, sorry.
We only play touch football, actually. It's like flag football. Like, we won't hit each other. And even still, we say sorry.
Okay, so I just have a couple of announcements, and then we will jump into the topic tonight. Tomorrow, or Wednesday, we have Emrass, who is the feminist next door, coming back onto the show, and she will be in a, I'm not even sure if I can call it a debate, because it will be intended as a debate, but I think it will quickly turn into a hellacious dumpster fire. Terrence Topp is a mid-owl. He is a man that is going his own way. And so the feminists will meet the the as far to the other end of the spectrum as you can, and we'll see what happens. Thursday, we will be doing debate roulette. If you guys are interested in being a part or coming on and debating the topic, what we do is we put a bunch of random and you vote based on how you based on the topic, whether you agree with the topic or disagree with the topic, and then two people are chosen at random. You come in and you have a 10-minute discussion, so it's kind of like a long command. So if you're interested in doing that, join in the Discord. I'm still waiting on my debate roulette dumpster fire. That has not happened yet. We've done 9 of them, and all of them have been fantastic. So actually, honestly, Steve can back me up on this. Some of them have been better than the actual planned debates that we've posted on here. So
very that's good. Cool.
It's odd.
It's surprising.
Yeah, it's odd.
But no preparation that people come in and have a discussion like that. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. I give props.
Saturday, we'll have a flat earth debate. He's been saying that he wanted to get in the ring with a flat earther, so he will get his feet wet, so to speak, on that. Because water always finds its level. So.
Oh, Jesus. God damn it.
And then finally, next Tuesday, we will be having a discussion on the death penalty, whether it should be abolished, and that will be with David Pakman. He will be here on Tuesday. So make sure that you tune in. As I alluded to earlier, I did a poll on Twitter just kind of gauging everybody's thoughts and where they stand on this issue that I'm talking about tonight. And,
what did you say? You got something going on with your... Your connection,
you're choppy
Kyle.
As can be.
You're choppy as hell.
You're breaking up every other word.
What about now? No?
You still were.
1 second. Bear with me. Okay. Better now.
Think so. We can try. Go.
Good. Good. Okay, so on results for the poll that worked up.
Nope.
Nope.
Still bad. People are while he's doing that, while he's fixing that, you can look at my cup. People are amazed by my cup. I don't know why. I have the same cup all the time I drink coffee from. This is my coffee. I actually have more than one of these. I have like 3. It's just like
it's
magic.
It's green, I assume. Or blue. Yeah.
It's green. Magic. This is I make a cup of a pot of coffee has 4 cups in it, right? First one was 4. The second cup, one I did was 3. So this is actually 7 cups of coffee I've had prepared for this. So, I may not get anybody to believe me. My DNA is not a code, but I'm sure they're all going to be wired enough to try.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Wired up, Steve. Just what everybody needs. Steve's getting wired up, and we're all really excited about it.
You should see me when I'm excited. Okay.
Hopefully it's better now.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm, okay. Much.
All right. So on the Twitter poll, I asked the question, would you consider DNA a code? And this is how the results now, before this debate happens, said, okay? Yes, we're 23%. No, 51%. Undecided, 20%. So that means... John, you have an uphill mountain to climb during this.
Well, I would like to point out that I was one of those people who voted no because the question was worded wrong.
And I'd like to point out that I didn't vote.
DNA.
I'm in Twitter jail. I can't vote.
DNA itself is not code. DNA itself is not code. The genetic code is a code. DNA is a molecule that code is sometimes written in. It can also be written in RNA and so on.
You should have totally called me out for that.
Spoilers.
I think it was worded just fine because that's what people ask about. But there's 20% that's undecided. Yeah. That's the ones that, Yeah, I'm already won by that title, by the way, because we both agree that's not a code in that regard. So in that regard, I'm done. Can I go home now? Thanks very much. See you guys.
So the debate that I originally hoped we were was, is the genetic code a code? And I think that Steve still does disagree with me on that.
I plan ahead. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I planned ahead. I know.
We're good.
Yeah, I made this interesting. I know that you and I both agree that the molecule itself is not a code, and I will point that out.
Okay, so after this debate, I will fix that in the follow-up poll will actually be worded correctly.
I think it's worded just fine.
Of course you're winning.
Well, that's true. Give me any advantage here. I'm the underdog here, even though most people are going to be agreeing with me, I think. I'm still the underdog because all three of you want to see me lose.
I refuse to agree with you, even if you're right.
Okay, whatever. Yeah, but somebody pointed out I'm already home. Good point. Thank you.
During this debate, Shannon's going to be moderating. She will be the unbiased
voice of reason.
Totally not somebody that would hashtag a team that they favor moderator. So
ignore.
I'm kidding. But let's say hello to the first debater. He hosts some show that all they do is talk to weird people, and it's not worth watching. Trust me. But he also has his own channel.
That's true.
He has his own channel where he talks about science in depth, has deep conversations with very smart people, and sometimes they're not so smart. You never know what you're going to get, but it's an excellent channel. And he is also the host of the Great Debate Community, a community of several. What are you up to now, Steve? How many people?
In the Great Debate Community?
Yeah.
Almost 1,800. But unfortunately, as you guys may have found out today, Google is shutting down G+.
I didn't know that.
We did not know.
Yes. End of next year, I believe it is. Well, we don't know the extent of what's going to happen, but as of right now, the normal accounts are going to be terminated at some point within the next year. So G+ is going away. They don't know if the communities are or the Hangouts, but we'll find out and we'll let people know.
Go to Discord.
Just move it over to MySpace. You're good.
Oh, yes.
Everybody loves MySpace.
No.
Especially Tom. Tom loves MySpace.
I still have Tom as a friend. Tom is the best friend I've ever had. He's like the longest friend I've ever had. He never talks back. He never gets angry.
That's great. Tom's everybody's friend. Everybody loves Tom.
A funny thing, real quick, as a side note, I had a viewer over Twitter, you know, in the request thing, people that maybe you don't follow. You have a tab where you go for people who, it doesn't show up in your regular DMs, but there's a tab that says like requests for people who are trying to send you a message. Well, I clicked that and somebody said, found this, thought you might like it. And it was a link to my MySpace when I was in college. And I was like, why isn't MySpace like burnt to the ground now? Kill it with fire.
Nuke it's awesome. Space.
The next gentleman with us runs a fantastic science channel and a channel that is more casual. It's the perfectly named Stated Casually, but he also has Stated Clearly, which dives into science related topics and explains them in a way that is easy to understand and follow. And I have been a huge fan for a long time, even long before he came on to do a presentation with Shannon on replacing or had to do with replacing Darwin, where we went into some of the things that book had. It's a pleasure to have him here. He's also, he worked for the Center of the Chemical Evolution, a NASA-funded research group focused on understanding the origin of life. The study, among other things, surrounds the origin of the genetic code, which we'll be talking about tonight. But a fantastic guy's excellent science communicator, and it's a pleasure to have him, John Perry. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Wow, well, he gets all that, and I get, hey, it's Steve.
You're like my
hey, like I've been a big fan. I've been a fan of John's too, so I've watched his videos, and I'm a huge fan as well. So
you're like my husband, though. You know what I'm saying? And like, we go places, it's like, here's Steve, and
you're like everybody's husband. Like, everybody wants to marry you. Every woman, every guy, everybody, it's like, Kyle's my husband. It's like polyamory to the nth degree.
The person that called me a gnome, a discount garden gnome,
yeah, fuck him,
to marry me. Yeah. So that was okay, me. Shannon.
Discount garden gnome.
Shannon, I'm handing the reins to you, and we will kick it off.
All right. Well, I expect a fair fight. Nobody talk over each other. Okay, we both know that both of you have presentations this evening, and we agreed beforehand that Steve was going to go first. So we are going to start the presentation portion. So everybody will have a moment or the time that they require to go through their presentation, and then we're going to have some just free-form discussion. Does that sound agreeable to both of you?
Sounds good.
All right. Okay, all right. Dave, do you mind transitioning the screen and putting on Steve's presentation, please and thank you? All right, Steve, the floor is yours. Right, don't make me mad, though.
I try not to. Just so people know, my slides got corrupted. I had some errors in this particular presentation. I will correct them as we go. But unfortunately, this was a PDF file that I had saved, and it's the only copy I have left, so I have to use this particular copy. So there are some mistakes, but I'll go through them. And so getting into this discussion, I wanted to have some objectives at first, and to clarify that both John and I have talked about this for a long time over the last couple of weeks, and we both agree that the question DNA as a code is formed because the DNA molecule, we both agree, is not a code. I think, but there are people out there that think it is. So I think it's a valid question to them, but to John and I, like, no, it's not a code. Oh, so anyways, our objectives. Explain the very basics of the central dogma of biology, which is the DNA to mRNA to proteins, which John is going to do as well. I think we're going to have exactly the same presentation as far as that. I want to show that DNA itself is not a code, especially a true code, but a macromolecule that stores biological information, and that there's a difference between a code and a cipher. And I skip the next slide because that was an error, and then go right to the next one. There we go. Thank you. My arguments will be basically that DNA itself is not a code. It's a macromolecule, which, again, I can't change that, but we agreed that it's not. So that one's kind of no longer applicable. But the genetic code is a misnomer, and that is an analogy for a heuristic approach to understanding concepts. It is more aptly akin to a cipher than a code. And I'll be explaining the differences between a code and a cipher and why it tends to be more of a cipher than a code, but it's kind of pseudo of both depending on how you use the terminology, whether you're coming from cryptography or you're coming from information theory or whatever, from biology. The words mean different things to different people, and I've talked to many different people, and specialists and experts in one field say it is, other ones say it's not. So I think it depends on what your area of expertise is. Next. What is DNA? DNA is deoxyribonucleic acid. It's a macromolecule. Most people have had, some biology, so this is kind of review for them. It has four nucleotides that it's comprised of with a sugar phosphate backbone. It's read by what's called RNA polymerase. What a little enzyme comes on, and it basically will attach to the, and as it does, it produces an mRNA strand, which is messenger RNA. Next slide. This is called the process of transcription. The central dogma of biology is basically DNA through transcription will go to mRNA. mRNA will go to a ribosome, and then it'll be translated into a protein. The way this works, again, is this RNA polymerase will read the DNA, and as it does, it produces an mRNA strand. That mRNA strand then goes through a little thing in the cell, the nucleus, that'll go to the ribosome. The ribosome will have a process by translates it, and it forms what's called a polypeptide chain. This chain will also be called a protein if it's over a certain amount of amino acids. Next slides. Okay. The relationship to RNA and DNA, besides a different sugar base, is that the RNA is a complement to the DNA strand, with some exceptions. The T will be coded for A. The A will be coded for U, which is uracil, instead of thymine. C will code to G. G will code to C. Again, I'm doing this real quickly, and this is very basic. If people want to get more technical about this, we can do that later on. But this is just kind of more of a review for the people that have had biology. The three RNA base pairs translates into a specific amino acid. This is called a nucleotide triplet. So each of those three things, like AUG, will code for a specific thing. And that we'll look at a chart and see what they will code for. And I'm using that code in this particular case as an analogy because that's just how we communicate a concept. Next slide. The mRNA to protein process in the ribosome works by this. You have what's called a tRNA or transfer RNA that has an anticodon and an amino acid attached to it. The specific three letters will code for a very specific amino acid, and as that chain that you see at the very top grows, it's a growing peptide chain, each amino acid will be added one by one. The proteins will be comprised of either one peptide chain or multiple peptide chains, and a peptide chain is really just a group of amino acids that's been put together through peptide bonds. Next. The way that the tRNA codes for this, and I was going to change this, so this is one of the mistakes I made. It's not really tRNA is encoded for. Is that tRNA is produced through a non-coding process because it's part of non-coding RNA. So way this basically works, people have asked me before, why do we have a very specific tRNA with a very specific codon, nuclear amino acid on it? And the reason being is because you have this enzyme called aminoactyl tRNA synthase. This particular one is specific for methionine. What happens is you have a tRNA for methionine that will fit exactly in that enzyme. You have the methionine amino acid that goes on the top, and then ATP, which is the energy molecule, used to fuse them together, and that produces AMP, which is a adenosine monophosphate plus two phosphate atoms. So it breaks apart a bond that releases energy, and it charges that tRNA. So now it's tRNA met, and that's what it'll take out of the cell nucleus to put in the ribosome to cause that chain, because all these things are floating around. So I'll pull that one out, and that's what I'll bond to it based upon the codon. Next. So this is not an RNA synthesis chart. This was a mistake that I made. I don't know why I called it the RNA synthesis chart. It's not. It's just a codon chart. So the way this works is pretty simple. There are three letters in the triplet. If the first letter is U, you go to the first thing. If it's A is the next one, or the second letter, which is the column, and then you look at the row for the third letter. And if you notice on here, certain things will only code for one particular amino acid. If you look at UGG, that'll only code for tryptophan. However, things like proline will be many different things will code for it. CC, anything. CCC, CCA, CCG, CCU, those are all code for proline. That's called third base wobble. And that's going to be critical to why this is not a code. And yes, I know that I'm going through this very quickly because I want to get to the code portion, because I think that's what the main I think so far everything John's going to agree with me on. Did I, John, real quick, is there anything that you want to touch on real quick that just on the biology stuff?
No. I agree so far. No. Okay. I mean, this chart here, this set of rules is what people typically call the genetic code. But...
Okay. Awesome. All right. So what is a code? A code is usually a cryptic substitution system that's decided on two or more people called the sender and receiver. Codes are secondary symbols that represent a primary symbol. For example, the car is fast. Car could stand for, quote, nuclear weapon, and fast, quote, for ready for launch. This way, if a third party intercepted that coded message, they would need what's called a code book to understand what the secondary symbols represent. So in this particular case, a true code is a one-to-one correspondence. If you have a word, you have something else that it represents, you have a separate symbol. So that symbol of nuclear weapon, right, think of it as one object, represents the one object car. So if people were, excuse me, the other way around, the car would represent the nuclear weapon. So we had an enemy, right, that intercepted this message, and they got the message, car is fast, they wouldn't know what it means unless they had the code book to translate that it was car represents nuclear weapon and fast means ready to launch. That's what is a true code. So the symbol is what is the code. And next slide. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I one slide ahead? Because I forgot to tell you to, there you go. The genetic code. If we assign primary symbols to the nucleotides in the DNA by labeling them, right? If I tell somebody ahead of time, if I want adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine to be represented by a secondary system, a secondary code, then I will say A, T, C, and G is the code. That is the code that represents those specific nucleotides. Those are arbitrary. I could be use anything, right? I pick anything I want, but it just so happens that I think the first letters very basic way to code for those particular nucleotides. So that seems trivial to me. I don't think that's what really is implied when somebody says DNA is a code. Because I do agree that A, T, C, and G, those symbols are a code because they're secondary symbols representing the primary symbols, the secondary being A, T, C, and G, the primary being adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine, and the words themselves, not just the ontological, meaning the in existence, nucleotides in the DNA. Next. The word code is polysemous, meaning it has multiple different meanings, and that's one of the problems when people say, is DNA code? It really means, what do you mean by code? If what are you looking at it from? Obviously, is it a program language? Well, no, DNA is not a program language. But they use the word code in programming language. And the reason why is because in a programming language, you have some instruction that is the secondary symbol that executes something by representing a primary symbol or string. For example, J and Z in assembly language means jump short if not zero. You have different flags in a computer, people may know. One of them is called the zero flag. If that happens to be zero, then you'll jump to some other memory location or some other part of the code. And J and Z is a code because it's coded by somebody that's performed a specific action to jump, if not zero, if a condition is met. That is a programming language or code. Next. So what is a cipher, though? Well, a cipher works on a little bit different principle. Cipher works generally, you encrypt or decrypt by use of an algorithm. Not always, not necessarily. It depends on what you mean by cipher. But unlike the need for a code book where you have a word or phrase representing another word, ciphers work on a more bit-by-bit system. It works on one letter at a time. And it can be easily deciphered if you know the algorithm. For example, if I wanted to decipher a phrase, the nuclear weapon is ready to launch, I could use a Caesar shift by shifting each letter one to the right on the alphabet, resulting in, well, what you see there, because I'm not going to be able to pronounce it. But that would be a cipher, because all I have to do to know how to decipher that is know how it was originally ciphered and used as deciphering algorithm, which would case in this case be shift it one to the left. Next slide. So in order to cipher that string, I just have to know the deciphering algorithm, which is called the key of the cipher, or the Caesar shift. In this case, be one letter to the left to get back to the original encrypted message. I could do that with any kind of encryption. As long as I have the key, I could decipher the original message. And a fun fact is there's something called a Verman cipher, which is unbreakable so long as you know the rules of the cipher are followed. They're called a one-time pad, based upon Shannon's communication theory of secrecy systems, which I think John's going to get into a little bit, which is one of the reasons I mentioned it here. Next. So why isn't DNA code? Well, obviously we've already established DNA as a macromolecule. So when they say DNA is a code, that as itself is clearly a not true statement. DNA itself as the molecule is not a code. But I think John and I both realize that that's not really the question at hand. Because he agrees, saying DNA is a code is... Sure.
Yep. Do you mind if I explain why DNA itself is not a code, just real quick?
Absolutely, go for it.
The pages in a book can carry a message with ink on that page, but the page itself, just ink and paper is not a message. And DNA can carry messages, but DNA itself is not a message. So there's vast amounts of DNA in our genome that's not used to carry any sort of encoded message. So that's why DNA itself is not a code. It's just the material that that the messages are written in.
Same thing like your hard drive is not a code. The information on it is different from the hard drive, right? So like you said, it's saying a book is a code rather than the information compiled in it, right? So we both agree that that is not the code. I do believe that the genetic code of ATGC is a code where you're representing letters, which is your secondary symbology, represents a specific type of nucleotide. So A, T, C, and G, those letters are genetic code. And I think that's when they talk about the genetic code, that's what they're specifically referring to as an information. But the information... itself is more of a cipher than a code. Next slide, and I'll explain why. So why isn't DNA not a code? One could use a codon chart to determine what amino acid each nucleotide triplet is going to code for, right? But unfortunately, for a code, it is a one-to-one correspondence. One word means one phrase, or one phrase means one word. Unfortunately, because of biology, certain other things like prokaryotes won't exactly code for an amino acid for the same triplet. Like, for example, in eukaryotes, AAA will code for lysine, right? But in other things, it may not be lysine. And GAU, for aspartate, I think in prokaryotes, I don't remember what it coded for, but they don't code for the exact same thing. So you can't say that the three letters are a one-to-one correspondence because it depends on what codon chart you're using for different species. Prokaryote would have a little bit different, especially for the start and stop codon. For methionine, it's the start codon, which it tells where to start the transcription. That is different from species as well. Next slide. Why isn't a triplet a code? Because some people say that the three letters are the code. Well, no, that's more of a cipher because, again, it's representing individual letters to represent one particular amino acid. The RNA codon chart is degenerate. And, again, I don't know why I called it the RNA codon chart. Scratch that. It's the codon chart is degenerate, meaning that more than one triplet can code for amino acid because, again, third base wobble. There's a redundancy in it. And with a code, you can't have redundancy. You have to have a one-to-one correspondence to have a code. Because if you have a code book, then you need to know what word is representing or what phrase is representing something else. And if you have multiple possibilities, then you're not communicating to the person you're trying to communicate the code to what your message is. So it has to be one-to-one. So in that regards, because it's not universal, it cannot be a code. Here we go. So yeah, so I knew I found it somewhere. It's AA in humans codes for lysine, but in other species like starfish, it'll code for aspergine. So that is not a one-to-one correspondence in echinoderms. Next. Almost done. I want to touch a little bit on Shannon information only for the fact that I think this is going to be where John's coming from. He's going to be coming from communication theory, and Shannon was the one that kind of came along and said, okay, what does it mean to have information in a system based upon the entropy of the system? So the way it works is this, in a very succinct nutshell. Log base 2n is the minimum number of bits to carry the information of DNA. When there's four possible nucleotides, it would take log base 2 of 4, which, if you do the math, is equal to 2 bits information. That'll cover all possible states, okay? If you have 0, 0, each one of those is 1 bit each, so you have 2 bits. That'll represent like T, 0, 1, A, 1, 0, C, and 1, 1, G. So for the four possible states, you only need 2 bits information because those 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0 can represent all four of those. Okay, so that's what Shannon information kind of basically is. Next. A little more simpler, a quarter can have two possible states, heads or tails, assuming fair coin and outcome, meaning that the coin is weighted properly and it won't land on the edge, and you have to have an outcome of one or the other, probability of one. In this particular case, the minimum bits to describe the possibilities is log base 2, 2, which is 1 bit. 0 for heads, 1 for tails. It only requires 1 bit to do that. Next. Shannon information and entropy. I was going to remove this because I thought it was kind of too much for this particular discussion, but I'm going to, since in here. The minimum amount of information in bits to effectively communicate a signal or message via a noisy channel due to entropy. What that basically meant is that if I have a channel where you're not getting 100% efficiency, what is the minimum amount of bits that I need to communicate a signal from the sender to the receiver? And that's based upon a very well-known formula for entropy, WK log M. In this particular case, it's just a modification of log omega, where omega is the microstates of the system. But if you're ever looking at thermodynamics, that formula is ubiquitous. It's a very, very common formula in entropy. Next, or entropy. But what Shannon did is he took the entropy and he made it a formalization for it, which is that formula there. I'm not going to get into the specifics of this. The only reason I brought it up is that when you apply it to DNA, it's based upon the index there of I as an element of A, C, G, and T, meaning that Shannon information is contingent upon those symbols. Again, information and code are not exactly the same thing. The information in the system is not the code. The code is A, C, G, T. Next. Things that the DNA doesn't code for. Not all DNA codes for protein, right? So when you're talking about DNA, there are other things that it will make. It'll make tRNA or what's called non coding RNA, which is transcribed but is not ever translated into proteins. The exons, if you look at RNA, it'll have introns and exons, and the pre-RNA gets spliced when it takes all those introns out, and it's just left with the exons. I had that backwards, by the way. That was another mistake that I made that I wanted to correct. It keeps the exons, it splices out the introns. Also, it doesn't code for protein folding, which is a very critical part of how proteins work. They have to be shaped exactly right to work. The DNA sequence has no bearing on how that protein is going to be folding. It's based on conformational changes due to charges from the amino acid residues, it's called. It has no effect on gene expression. So these things that are incorporated into the system have nothing to do with the code, but they all go into how proteins are made. Next. Also, the code doesn't code for epigenetic factors, histone acetylation, deacetylation modification, which is basically a fancy way of saying how much DNA is going to be exposed to that RNA polymerase. Those little protein things, those little round things, DNA goes around those. And if it's really tightly wrapped, the RNA polymerase can't get to it, right? It has to be kind of loosely wrapped. And if they're really close together, the polymerase can't get in between them. So what histone modification does is kind of separate those histones, allowing the RNA polymerase to reach the DNA easier. That's not coded. That's not quote-unquote coded by those sequences in the DNA. Next. Additional thoughts on DNA not being a code. I think this is a real big one. Codes require portability from one medium to another. DNA contains information, but nothing that can be detached and transferred to some other medium, like raised bumps, such as Braille or magnetic tape. So if I said, I want to take the code off RNA, DNA, it's not portable. It doesn't translate into Braille, because the Braille, all that can represent is the A, D, C, and G, which is the code. This is the same problem you have with Morse code. Morse code is not a code. Morse code is a cipher. This is the same thing with binary. Binary is not a true code in that regard. Matter of fact, if you actually go look at Morse code, they actually call it Morse cipher in a lot of places, because it is more technically a cipher than a code. What is transferred to RNA and proteins by means of the central dogma of biology is merely chemical and physical structure by which the laws of chemistry by psychophysical or psychochemical conformational changes. So what that basically implies is that the only thing that's really being ported over from the DNA to the protein is how to put those amino acids together, right, to form the protein. There's no code in that actual system. There's no code in there. Information. Next.
Okay, can I just ask a quick question here?
This is my last one, by the way. Yeah, go ahead.
If binary code is not a code and Morse code is not a code, then what are some examples of code, according to you?
Having a code book, for example.
You can have a code book. You can have a code book for binary code. Yeah, there's code.
We'll get it. Let me finish up. But yeah, Morse code is technically more correct than cipher.
John, you're going to get your turn. I thought I was going to have DLST, but John.
This is so good.
At the end, you guys will get a chance to go back and forth. Let's see, finish his presentation. Steve?
Okay, so I think what it boils
John,
down to.
John, behave yourself.
I think the word code is used differently in different things. I've looked in information theory. I've looked at signal processing. I have worked a little bit with discrete signal processing, and the term code is not utilized that way in that. Computer programming is used completely different. It's used as a program language. Language is not a code. I know a lot of people argue language is code, but everything I've looked at from linguistically, it's not a code. Again, the symbology would be that you have a secondary set of symbols representing a primary symbol. Language is not a one-on-one correspondence. It cannot be a code. But again, biology, law, like even in the terminology of a legal system, a code is by which by actions we were supposed to abide by, right? You have a legal code. That's not a code by which I think John would agree that we're talking about. So even in biology, legal, cryptography, the word code has multiple different meanings. I'm arguing from the most strictest, which is called sensu strictissimo position, that DNA is not a code. Sensu lato, which is a very broad definition, people can call it a code, but I still think it's much more of an analogy than a true code. And I just want to end with Dave. I sent you a something that I can't screen share. Can you do it real quick?
And while he's waiting on that, let me make an announcement real quick to you guys. If you watched the show last night, where we had the guy that came on to talk about the 1080 poison that's going on in New Zealand, if you remember, in the middle of the interview or when we were kind of wrapping up, his wife broke into the interview and said that the police were at the door and they had come to take his guns and his gun license. So we had to cut it abruptly short. Well, he actually continued to film and sent me the video of his confrontation with the police. So we'll be uploading that to the channel tomorrow, and you'll be able to see the police come in searching for the guns and how that unfolded. So be sure to check that out tomorrow morning on the channel.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just put the link in for some other things, like where it says Morse code is not a code. It says, despite its name, Morse code is not a code, but a cipher. But I did want to leave with Francis Crick, who did one of the discoverers of the triple helix of DNA. He said this. He said, and this is from Who Wrote the Book of Life, A Story of Genetic Code. In fact, years later, Crick granted, quote, the proper technical term for such a translation rule, strictly speaking, not a code, but a cipher, in the same way that Morse code should be really called Morse cipher. I did not know this at the time, which was fortunate because, quote, genetic code sounds a lot more intriguing than, quote, genetic cipher. That is from the one that actually won a Nobel Prize for determining the structure of DNA. So even he grants it is much more like a cipher than a code. And if people want to go look up Morse code is more like a cipher, they're more than welcome to. I put the link in the video in the live chat, and there you go. Pleasures.
All right.
A bit longer than I expected.
Thank
I'm sorry.
You, Steve.
And I was talking fast.
It's
a lot of
all
stuff
right,
to go
Steve.
Over.
It's John's turn now. So, all right. So we have a little hashtag war going on Twitter. Don't forget to at nonsexshow. So we have hashtag Team Steve and hashtag Team John. So now it is going to be John's turn. I'm just saying.
All right.
I'm hashtag Team John. All right. So, Dave, do you mind putting up John's presentation?
Thank you. So I've got a lot of spots in here for questions, and I'm happy to have Steve ask questions during that time or people who are writing in to ask questions during that time. So if we get super chats or whatever, I've got lots of spots in this for that. But so, again, the question that I was really hoping we were going to ask here is the genetic code a real code? Because as Steve and I both agree, DNA itself is not. It's just the molecule that the code is written in. This little box here on the screen, this codon chart, this is the set of rules that govern the genetic code. And if we can go to the next slide here, we'll get a quote from good old Richard Dawkins. He wrote a book called A River Out of Eden. And in this, he says, after Watson and Crick, we know that genes themselves, within their minute internal structure, are long strings of pure digital information. What is more, they are truly digital in the full and strong sense of computers and compact disks, not in the weak sense of the nervous system. The genetic code is not a binary code, as in computers, nor an eight-level code, as in some telephone systems, but a quaternary code with four symbols. The machine code of the genes is uncannily computer-like. Apart from differences in jargon, the pages of a molecular biology journal might be interchanged with those of a computer engineering journal. So, according to code, people who study computers, things like binary code, the genetic code is a real code. And if we go to the next slide, this here is the reason that there are so many people today, I think, that are upset calling the genetic code a real code. And it's because there is this argument that comes from creationists. It says that the genetic code is a real code. All codes that we know of were intelligently designed. Binary code was, for example. Morse code was, for example. Therefore, they conclude the genetic code was intelligently designed. Next slide. So, this is, that's a syllogism, and the syllogism is I mean, the conclusion does follow the two premises. So they've correctly written a syllogism, but one of their premises is wrong. And that's why their conclusion is also wrong. And a lot of atheists I've noticed online lately have been assuming that premises one is wrong.
Syllogism is,
Oh, did he freeze? I'm just waiting. I'm taking notes here, and all of a sudden I just got quiet. I'm like, what just happened?
I didn't mean to scare you off, John.
John, I'm harmless.
Oh,
get back here.
Stop. John didn't look like he was shaken. John didn't look scared. Did he just freeze?
Oh, yeah, no, he's wrong, but he's not scared. Yeah, he's wrong. But
does he have the right code to get back in? Does he have the right code to get back in?
That's another thing. I forgot to even mention that. Codes for that, too. Indexly.
Yeah. Library code. This is tragic. This is just starting to get interesting.
I don't want to continue without him because now I feel... We can't, really.
We don't have the other side of the argument yet.
I mean, I can address what he said so far in my notes, but I want him to hear it.
No.
So he doesn't make the same mistake again.
Let's hold off on that.
No, wait. He'll come back. John will come back in, I'm sure of it.
I bet he's still talking.
he may well be, actually. I'll message him.
You may not realize he...
I'll message him. Yeah. Carl, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, the voting, guys, for the Golden Nuns, which is a award show that we're going to be having on November the 25th, is still going on. There's two more weeks left. You can go to tinyurl.com/GoldenNuns or just click the link in the description and go and vote for your favorite content creators. There's two different sections, one that's YouTube-wide and then one that is just specifically for our show that you can vote for. The YouTube-wide one you can fill in, so it can be open to anybody. And then you just click the multiple choice on the non-sequitur versions of the show. I looked at some of the results. As much as we appreciate it and love you guys, there for about 4 days, we were winning the channel of the year. We cannot we cannot be in the running, but we do appreciate putting us out there like that. Yeah, it is. But once again, the links in the description, so click that. And also our Discord. If you're not a member of our Discord, that's where a lot of these conversations continue on past after the show ends. You can come check that out. There's a daily topic now that Shadow does a good job of running, so check that out. Go be part of this. Go watch the dumpster fire sometimes that happen. And can we talk about something while we still wait? There's a thing out there that I didn't know existed, and that's the people that get angry when you ping them too many times on Discord. I've had this conversation. I don't know how many times. There's a certain set of people that every time you hit the at everyone.
That's a nightmare. That's the reason I turned off my Discord notifications.
You know what? I just told somebody to do that today, too, just to piss off the admins.
Thank you.
I told somebody today.
I'll tell you what to do. Turn off your Discord notifications. Check your Discord a couple times a day. When you go to the at filter, so the at everyone's are
I'm back.
And then you're done. Yay, oh, John's back.
Hey, I told you guys he didn't run. You guys like, oh, John ran.
Steve. Now I'm back to realizing that it's you that I'm going to have to rank. All right. John, are you good? Are you ready?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Did I lose internet connection? Is that what happened?
Yeah.
We don't know. You were just crap. Gone. You just stopped. All right.
I'm taking notes, so go ahead.
You were at premise two of your syllogism.
Premise two. Okay, so if we go to the next slide. Most people know that the conclusion there is there's something fishy with that conclusion, right? If you know anything about biology. And so they assume that one of the premises must be wrong. And most atheists have been saying that the first premise is wrong. And this is an argument that they've been using. I really think that all the people that are upset about calling the genetic code a code are upset because creationists said this to them and they didn't know how to respond. And so they've attacked the genetic code being a true code. go to the next slide here. That is wrong. That is a mistake. The genetic code really is a code. Next slide. The real issue is that their second premise is false. When they say that all codes that we know of were intelligently designed, that's where the error really is. And I'm going to go in today and talk a little bit about how it is that codes evolve, how it is that communication systems evolve. We go to the next slide here. Next two slides, actually. But first, it's important to just kind of talk about what a code is in general. So here I've got the ASCII code. And again, Steve is claiming that the ASCII code is not a code, which doesn't make any sense to me, because this is what everybody considers to be codes. The ASCII code, the Morse code, and it's what Claude Shannon was studying when he was inventing the coding system for Bell, which he used. He digitized audio so it could be sent over the phone, and he was studying the uses of digital code that had been used in computers before him. So he was looking at ASCII code, binary code. He was looking at Morse code, and he was looking at things like actual languages. So languages are codes. You can create keys that can cipher, act as a cipher for the code. So here we've got, a really horrible cipher table for English. You've got apple, cry, horse, shoes, plane, and little images that represent those. The really interesting thing to note here is that codes are roughly arbitrary. So in ASCII binary code, we've got A is represented by 1000001. But we could have chosen a different set of ones and zeros. And your keyboard communicates with your computer through binary code. When you hit A on your keyboard, it's sending a series of ones and zeros to your computer. Now, it's not actually sending ones and zeros. One means on, zero means off. So your computer is constantly counting. And when you hit A, it sends a little jolt of electricity. And then it sends a couple of null packets. So there's just, it's not doing anything. Then it sends that one again. And your computer is counting that up. And it reads that as 1000001. And it knows ahead of time, because it's been programmed to know this, that means A. So it will display an A on your screen. In international Morse code, these are the dots and dashes that we have decided upon in advance to use. So A is a dot and a dash. So beep, beep. E is just a dot, and so on. And the point of Morse code is to send information through a wire. You can send pulses of electricity through a wire. That can be read by a receiver and then decoded back into letters. So the purpose of a code is to encode information in a format that it can be transmitted across some sort of a medium. When your keyboard takes the A button and turns that into ones and zeros, it can then easily transmit that through the wire. When people using Morse code take an A and put it into a dot and a dash, they can easily transmit that through a wire. When you have a thought, you're thinking about an apple, you can encode that thought into a series of vibrations and moves of your mouth. And that sound that you produce can be transmitted through the air into the ear of someone else. They can receive that in their ear and then decode it back into the thought of an apple. So you have information on both. You have this thought of an apple. You can encode that into some sort of a form that can then be transmitted. And then a receiver can decode that if they know the rules to decode it. And they will get that same image in their head that you had. So information is transferred through encoding and then decoding. Go to the next slide here. A code is a set of rules governing a communication system. This is how Claude Shannon describes it in his paper. He uses a lot more words than that, but that's how he describes it in his one of his most famous papers, which we'll look at here in a second. So the code itself is the set of rules that govern a communication system. And to really understand what that means, we'll have to know what a communication system is, and we'll look at that here in a second. So we see that these charts that we're looking at, these are showing us what the rules are to these different communication systems. We see the ASCII code rules here. We see the Morse code rules here. We see a really short list of English rules here. Go to the next slide. This is the paper that Shannon wrote that really, really helped kickstart the digital revolution. It's called The Mathematical Theory of Communication. And what he did is he was studying all these different codes that people had come up with. He figured out what it is they all have in common. And he described completely mathematically, he described how it is that codes work, how it is that communication systems work. And it's a fairly long paper. It's a lot of math. But he's actually pretty good at describing in between equations what's going on. And this, him being able to articulate this, what it is that a code is, what it is that a communication system is, this absolutely changed the world. This allowed more and more people to get on board and start creating codes, started being able to create machines that could talk to other machines. It allowed us to create massive amounts of digital information. So this is thought to have given rise to the digital era that we now enjoy. Again, binary code, there was a version of it that was already invented, which is one of the things that he studied when he was producing this. But this was a major, major breakthrough in our understanding of what communication systems are. And this is actually really important in biology, because when we look at biology, we realize that there are communication systems on top of communication systems on top of communication systems in our cells, in different organisms. And the genetic code is just one of those communication systems. It's at the basement of life. We go to the next slide here. This is his diagram that he created, showing what a communication system is in its most abstract form. So we've got an information source, and then that information is transmitted. There has to be a transmitter. And some people call this an encoder. Vocabulary is constantly changing, unfortunately. And across different fields, it changes as well, which is always a problem when we had discussions like this. But so if we think about a person that has an idea of an apple and they want to transmit that to someone else, you know, the purpose of a communication system is to get information from one point to another point. And to do that, if you have an idea of an apple, you have to encode that in some sort of a way that can be transmitted to your receiver, the person that you want to talk about an apple to. And the way that we do that in spoken language is, again, through moving our mouth and pumping air through our voice box and so on. And if the person speaks the same language as us, if they know the same rules to the code that we're encoding that message in, the receiver on the other end can receive that information. And Claude Shannon talks a lot about noise. So between the transmitter and the receiver here, we have a channel. And in spoken English, that channel is the air. He talks a lot about noise because his big thrust was how to avoid noise in the system. You know, if there's noise in a room, you have to be able to communicate through that if there's a lot of wind or whatever. And there's also noise in a wire that when you're delivering information through a wire, when you're transmitting information through a wire, you have to deal with noise. So he focused a lot on that. Then you have a receiver, and that receiver decodes that message into the thought of an apple. Go to the next slide here. So here's kind of a simplified version with language that's more common today. A lot of times we'll talk about the transmitter being the encoder. So up at the top here, I have kind of an abstract example of a communication system. You've got an encoder. That encoder encodes information and into a message. That message is transmitted to a decoder, and that decoder decodes that message. And code, or languages, govern how it is that that message is written, the rules by which that message is written. So we have a keyboard here. The keyboard is the encoder. You know, you're actually the source of the message. You press the letter A, and it encodes that into ones and zeros. It transmits that through the wire to the CPU in your computer. and your computer then decodes that into the letter A, which it displays on the screen. Another example of this, I've got me, and I'm using the rules of blueprinting. I have created a message of a house. Now I'm going to send that to a contractor, and he is going to decode that message into a house. So the house is the decoded message in this example. And then finally, we have the genetic code. You've got a stretch of DNA that is a message is produced from that DNA, is encoded into RNA. That RNA then meets up with the ribosome, and the ribosome is a special molecule in our cells that decodes messages in RNA, and it decodes them into proteins. So what you could say here is that the genome, the gene, is telling the ribosome how to build a protein. And it uses the genetic code to do that. The genetic code is the set of rules that the genome uses to communicate with the ribosome. To the next slide here. So, yeah, questions from anyone?
I don't have any questions. I mean, I've got refutations for everything you just said. I've taken notes, but I'm going to wait till you're done with your presentation.
Are there any live chat questions or clarifications? Kyle, did you see any live chat questions?
No, I know what his argument is. I don't have any questions. I know what his argument is.
Asked if the Nazis' enigma, what he considered the Nazis' enigma, a cipher or a code.
That's a cipher.
The only one that I've...
It's one symbol. So, I mean, it's a symbol that we understand. So, it's a...
The way that the Enigma machine worked is the Enigma machine had to be set up exactly from one specific condition for the wheels. There was trillions of different combinations it had. And so even if the allies or the enemy or whatever got a hold of this machine, they wouldn't know the initial configuration to do the algorithm, because this is what a cipher is. If you know the algorithm, like that Caesar shift, where you just, like, say, shift one to the left each letter, you know how to decipher it. But that's what the Enigma machine did. But you had to know the initial configuration of it. That was a cipher, not a code.
So, what's that?
You still have more for your presentation? You still have more?
Well, I've got quite a bit more, but I guess I want to understand. So you think that, what is the difference between encryption and coding in your mind?
Okay, so let me kind of go through your thing, and I'll get to that. If you're talking about a digital code, it is definitely digital, right? It's not an analog component to this. Digital means discrete, so we're talking about the Shannon information of bits, which is like 00011011. That's clearly digital. Agreed? So when Dawkins is talking about that, that's what he's referring to. Those four symbols, the A, T, G, and C, which is the genetic code that we both agree that part is a code. Those symbols can be represented via Shannon information by two bits. That's why it's digital. That's why he calls it digital.
Dawkins calls quaternary. It a quaternary code. Yeah.
Right.
Specifically, he calls it a quaternary code. C-O-D-E.
Right. as I explained, heuristically, we use language with these words because there are limitations on how we express things. Just because something used a word code does not necessarily, in strict definition, make it a code. It's a way to explain things by use of analogy.
I need to interrupt for a second to get both of you to clarify something for the sake of me and everybody in the audience. Yeah. What is the difference between a cipher and a code? Just very concisely, so that we can make
sure
that...
He can go first, and then if he wants. Do you want to explain that, and then I'll explain it?
Well, From my
perspective, it looks like there's
semantic
arguments.
I'm curious to hear what you think. Yeah, I'm curious to hear... I'm curious to see what you think, because...
Because it seems semantic to me.
No, they're not. A lot of people use the terms interchangeably, and they're not. It's especially like encode or encrypt. They use them interchangeably.
Why?
That's not. Encrypt means to go through an algorithm. A code is this. Again, this is what a true code is. I take a primary symbol, like the word car, and I want to convey that to Shannon, and I want her to know. Let me start again. The word nuclear weapon. I want to convey to her a nuclear weapon, and I don't want John to know what the hell I'm talking about. Like, he doesn't now. No, I'm just kidding. But I want to take that and I want to convert it to a code. And I say, okay, the word I'm going to use, which is conveying meaning, codes conveying some kind of meaning, like the word car has some kind of meaning, right? It's readable.
So
it's
by your definition, are all codes like linguistic? All codes are semantically linguistic. So it's so all I about transmitting an image or some sort of information. So right, if something isn't linguistic, it by your definition can't be a code because codes only exist linguistically.
Right. That symbol, that's those three letters, C-A-R, represent the one symbol, one object that represents nuclear weapon. In order to you to know what the hell I'm talking about, you need that code book that says car equals nuclear weapon. In the days of,
so it's about transcription from. So it's about transcription from the initial item. You would transcribe that into something, and then the
something else. Right.
The object is for me to use some sort of cipher in order to be able to enter into my cognition that's what you're trying to transmit.
No, you don't use the cipher. You don't use a site. So you need a code book.
I'll give you an example.
Right.
See, this
I'll
is why
it's
so semantic. So, but if it's only but it's linguistic, not. It's not.
But let me give you an example.
Why not?
If I wanted to, back in the day, it cost money to send things through telephony. It was very costly, right? And so instead of having a long sentence that meant something, they used in accounting, they would say like you know bounce the books for this whatever, okay? Instead of writing out bounce the books for, they would have one word, and that one word would be like quaternary, and I think quaternary was one of the words they used in the code book. So if the receiver had that word quaternary, they knew what it meant to be like in the exact phrase. It's a way of shortening it down. That's what a code is. Okay, a cipher is different. A cipher again is a one-to-one, a bit correspondence to one letter to one thing. For example, C A R. If I shift those one to the left, I end up with D B S. Right. So that's ciphering. Right. And if I want to decipher it, I just have to know the algorithm. And the algorithm is shift each letter to the left. I don't need a code book. I just have to know the algorithm, the key. It's called. That's the huge difference. A code book is very big, but an algorithm and cipher is just, what is it? Shift to the left.
So the difference is the method of encoding and the method of decryption.
Correct.
Yeah, so,
encoding is
usually the same thing.
A word level. Individual letter. There's a huge difference there. If I want to encode something, I'm going to code a word.
Actually not.
If I want to cipher, I cipher each letter at a time.
All right. Okay. John. Thank you for that clarification. Yeah. John, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm going to mute myself. Yeah. I just wanted, for the sake of my sanity and everybody in the chats, I just needed to get that out of the way.
I want to clarify one other point. Because I'm using that for code, it actually does work as well for cipher. Cipher is in some ways linguistically as well. The problem is that neither one of these, by all definitions, are either a code or a cipher. They're pseudocode, pseudocipher. It really depends, again, what definitions you want to use for these things. So in any true form, it's not even – DNA is not even a true cipher in that regard either, but it's close enough. I think it's more closer to a cipher than a code.
All right, so you're saying
you're saying the genetic code is a cipher, not a code, and that binary code is a cipher, not a code, and that Morse code is a cipher, not a code.
Yes, and ASCII is a cipher as well.
So all the things that computer scientists call codes, they're wrong.
It's just stuck. It's just a term that's stuck. It's one of those. Okay. There's a lot of things in science that people have bad terminology that just stuck. We call it the Big Bang. It's not a bang, right?
So the people that invented code were wrong for calling it code.
No.
The people that invented and named it originally were wrong until you came here and corrected them.
This is validatable. Anybody can go validate on Google. We have something called Google now. Go look it up. Morse code, ASCII, not a code. Go look at Morse code. I have different pages of Morse code. They call it a cipher, some of them call it the Morse code cipher. So there is evidence for this. I'm not just like pulling this out of my Keister here. So, but I want to address his syllogism.
Keister doesn't mean Keister, Steve. Keister doesn't mean Keister. All right. We're gonna go to John because he hasn't been on his
sure.
Yes,
but I do have other things I want to address for them.
So the most important thing with with understanding is, and again, the only reason that people think that genetic code is not a code, except for you, who are, you are a special case, the only person in the world that doesn't accept codes as being codes. Aside from that,
That was rhetorical. We're going to let you respond. Go ahead, John.
You'll get a chance to. I can't mute Steve for the record.
aside from Steve not accepting the definitions of computer science and Claude Shannon, you know, if we look at the people who invented these codes, they call them codes, and they have since the start. All of these codes, the reason that many atheists have an issue with this is because of this creationist argument. For some reason, atheists think that because creationists make an argument, we should throw away our language and stop calling the genetic code a code. I do not agree with this. The actual issue with that creationist argument is the second claim that they make, their second premise, when they say that all codes that we know of were intelligently designed. That is false. It is true that the genetic code is a code, but it's not true that all codes are intelligently designed. And so if we go to the next slide, we're going to look at some codes that have evolved. There is a field of biology called signaling theory, of evolutionary biology, which studies the evolution of communication systems. And it turns out that every time you get symbiosis to evolve between two organisms, you also get the evolution of a new communication system. So here on the left, we've got a goby and a shrimp. This is a pistol shrimp. I don't know if you know the story about these guys, but the shrimp is really good at digging, but it doesn't have very good eyesight. And they'll team up with a goby. They'll dig in this nice burrow. They'll live in it together. And when the two go out to get food, they actually eat different foods. The goby mainly eats meat, and the shrimp mainly eats algae. They'll go out looking around for food, and when something dangerous comes by, the goby will signal by wiggling its tail that there's a danger, and the shrimp and the goby will both go back into their little cave. And there's a lot of complicated communication that's going on between these two organisms. It's really cool because you can actually get these in your aquarium and you can study it at home. Like, they actually sell these at the pet store. It's amazing. Bacteria also have very complex communication systems, which we'll talk about here. They do, among other things, something called quorum sensing, where they send out communication molecules just to basically say, hey, I'm present. And the other bacteria can receive that, and they can get a sense of how many other bacteria there are in the population. And the reason that I bring this up is that there is no thinking involved here. Communication does not have to involve thinking. It does not have to involve a brain. The shrimp and the goby, they both have brains. We're used to inventing communication systems with our brains. Someone just sat down and invented binary code. Someone just sat down and invented Morse code. But communication systems and the codes that govern them can actually, a code being the set of rules governing a communication system, these things can evolve. And I'll actually talk about how this evolved in bacteria. But these bacteria, once they have received enough signals from their neighbors, you know, once there's a lot of signals hitting them, certain genes inside their genome will turn off and others will turn on, and they'll start changing their behavior. And they'll do things in a group that are better to do in a group than alone. They'll excrete digestive enzymes, for example. And as a group, they'll excrete all these digestive enzymes at the same time, and that'll allow them to accomplish more together than they could have ever done alone. And they wait until the time is right, and they use this communication system to figure out when that time is right. Here, we've got golden jackals. Golden jackals, like all dogs, have an extremely complicated communication system that is molecular-based. You seem to be stuck on symbols having to be letters or something like that, but symbols can be anything. These dogs are using these dogs are using molecules in their urine to communicate to each other, and they're communicating all sorts of complicated things to each other when they're in heat. If they're in heat, they're communicating whether or not they're actually available. There all sorts of things they're communicating, not just by the molecules that are in their urine, but also how they're marking in different areas. A very complicated communication system that's studied by people who are studying the evolution of codes and communication in biology. And then finally, we've got the black bear, which I'll talk about on the next slide here. So how do communication systems evolve? In signaling theory, communications start out with cues, and those eventually evolve into legitimate signals. And this is an example from my childhood. I'm going to start out with an example from two thinking creatures. So we're going to use our brains to invent a communication system. And then we'll talk about how communication systems can evolve between things that don't know how to think at all. They don't have that ability to think at all. But when I was a kid, I used to go camping a lot. I was a Boy Scout. And we were told that there's bears in one of the areas that I was camping at. And it turns out that bears are scared of humans. They avoid humans if they know that humans are around. But if you surprise them, if you just happen across the bear, a lot of times it will attack you because it's scared. So they've got this fight or flight response. If you're close enough, they'll fight you. If you're far enough, they'll run away. So the bear wants to run away from you. It does not want to interact with you. But if you're just walking through the woods quietly, like you normally would, you can end up getting killed by a bear. So we were told to signal to the bear that we were present, and we would do this by singing when we were walking in the woods. We would do this by talking. Some people would put bells on their shoes, things like that. There are different ways that you can signal to the bear that you're there, and that will allow the bear to run away. Now, when all organisms, all things are constantly putting off cues that they exist. So I'm making noise, and another organism that might be in the room could hear that noise and get that cue and hide from me. Maybe there's a spider in the room with me. I'm not trying to communicate with spiders in my room right now. I'm communicating with you guys. So these things that I'm sending out, this noise that I'm making to the spider, that is considered a cue. The spider picks up on it, but I'm not sending it on purpose. Someone walking through the woods, their footsteps are a cue to the bear. The bear can pick up on that, but the person just walking through the woods isn't actually sending a signal. They're just accidentally emitting cues. Predators can use cues to hunt their prey. So there's nothing intentional about sending out a cue. When a sender starts doing it on purpose, when a sender starts actually trying to communicate with the other entity, then we call it a signal. And in biology, we call it a signal when the sender starts magnifying the cue because they're getting some sort of survival benefit from it. Is that clear? So the difference between a cue and a signal, is that clear? Okay. Steve, we go to the next slide here. Okay.
I'm just waiting for my rebuttal.
Yeah. I know.
So,
be patient. You're doing good. I'm proud of you.
So how is it that communication systems evolve between things that can't think? You know, I was able to develop a communication system with a bear because someone taught me how. So I used my brain to do that. And the bear's using his brain to figure out, you know, what to make of these signals that are being sent his way as well. Well, in bacteria, it turns out when we study the communication system in bacteria, it's very clear that the molecule that they send out is actually just a waste product. It's their urine, essentially. Something that they're just trying to get rid of. They don't want it in their body. Other bacteria evolved a receptor that could receive that urine. We'll just call it urine. It's not actually urine, but receive that molecule. And when it would receive that molecule, they would change their behavior. We now see that these things are actually producing these waste materials on purpose. They're actually producing more than they need. They're actually burning calories to produce these faster than they otherwise would be. And because of that, we now call it a signal. These bacteria, you could say, are doing it on purpose. They've evolved the ability to enhance their signal. And so we call it a true signal now. And it turns out that bacteria actually have a fairly complex, some of them have a fairly complex collection of signals and fairly complex reaction to those signals that they send and receive to one another. And this entire, all of this is happening without a brain. all of this is happening simply because of descent with modification acted upon by natural selection. Communication systems evolve every time two or more evolving entities have selection pressure to cooperate. And when there is selection pressure and two evolving entities, the communication system will emerge. It will evolve. Or I should say it can evolve, because it's also possible that two organisms live right next to each other and never end up having the right mutations to even know that the other is there. But these are the circumstances in which a communication system can evolve. Furthermore, once you have organisms that can think, they can actually use their brains to develop communication systems much faster than the slow process of evolving a communication system the way that bacteria have to do. But that is signaling theory kind of in a nutshell. And this is how codes evolve. Again, a code is the set of rules that govern a communication system. And next slide here. This is just more on dogs. We're all very well aware. I just wanted to drive home the fact that a symbol in a communication system does not have to be a letter. It can be a molecule. One of the symbols, there are many symbols in a dog communication system, and they can smell those molecules. They can get all sorts of information. Is the dog in heat? Is the dog bigger than me? And so forth. They can actually recognize each other by these molecules that are in their urine. And again, those molecules aren't a dog in heat. Those molecules are symbols saying that this dog is in heat. It's not an actual dog in heat. It is truly a symbol that the dog can understand. So that's why when you take them out on a walk. Yes. Yeah. Their Facebook, their Twitter is smelling the bush that some other dog peed on. So be nice to your dogs and let them sniff that bush next time you take them out for a walk.
So much like
I'm all into so bush sniffing.
Yeah, yeah, but he's lots not a lot on Twitter.
Is it right, John, lots John, of
does that, does that wrap? Mm-hmm. Is that? Do you have any more slides?
Next slide. What's the next slide? I've actually got. Oh, here's so.
We're running low on here's time, a, and I want you guys.
I feel like I've yeah. talked to Jensen. Next slide. Yes. Next slide.
Yeah. Steve, you did the same thing. Is that? Wait, yeah, are we getting close to? I want to be able to have back and forth between us.
I can end it here, but I've got another section where I talk about translation and transcription and all that stuff. But he already kind of went over that, so
yeah.
And we can get to that in the back and forth. So. Yeah,
perfect. This is just. Yeah, I want everybody to know. I want everybody to know that this book right here, Behavioral Ecology, is the best book to start if you want to learn how communication systems evolve. And that book's expensive, though. It's a textbook. This paper right here that I'm showing on screen, which I can't read on. Hold on. I've got it here, too. That's a really good paper that gives a good overview. It's called Evolution Theory of Bacterial Quorum Sensing. When is a signal not a signal? And actually, this is a paper by Stuart West where he was just correcting the use of other biologists. They were misusing signaling theory and not understanding it properly. And this he corrects them. And, well, actually, Stuart West didn't write it. He was one of the authors on it. It's a really good paper that describes what signaling theory is at its core in biology. So. And that's free. You can just Google that and find it.
Thank you. All right. Okay. All right. So we're running low on time.
I'm done.
So,
yeah.
Okay. There's not a lot of time for formal rebuttals, and I really want to see the interaction back and forth as you guys ask questions. I'm going to try to argue.
I got to address her.
I know, Steve. I know. Just let me finish the sentence, and I promise you can go. So I may interrupt if I feel you're talking past each other so that I can help sort of translate to the audience, but mostly I'm going to let you guys kind of have a back and forth, and Kyle will interrupt if we have any super chats that need to be read, because those take precedence, because those people are kind enough to pay to have the opportunity to ask a question. So I will interrupt you for that, or if I feel like you're talking over each other and nobody can understand what you're saying. So Steve, I will let you take the floor first, because I know you're about to die. So please go ahead, Steve.
No, not at all, because I think the last 10 minutes
I'm proud of you.
It's funny you mentioned things like quorum sensing. We actually have a PhD that did their thesis on quorum sensing, and so we've talked about it before. Quorum sensing, as I understand, is basically if you have a certain amount of chemical that's in the system, like for Aspergillus or some kind of bacteria, then it'll signal some kind of thing through a pathway. So this is like G protein coupled receptors, right? And I actually did a video on this a long time ago on those very same things. So I that is information that has nothing to do with the code. I think what's happening is you're confusing information and signaling, because quorum sensing deals with signaling of those G-coupled protein receptors. Those are not a code, though. The code is how I've explained the code to be. And when you go back a little bit earlier about the ID argument, I'm not arguing from an ID position, and I don't care how the IDers argue it. Codes generally do come from intelligence. Now, again, that's only by strict definition. You can take a more loose definition. But the reason the codes come from an intelligence is because the sender and the receiver have to be able to communicate what the message is. And the only way you do that is you give them a code book, right? So there is an understanding. Just because a syllogism is true, that doesn't mean it's convincing. So even if it's the case that a code is by an intelligent mind, it doesn't get you to an intelligent designer because it's just by definition. It's not a convincing argument. For a good argument, you need to be logically valid. It needs to be sound. The premises have to be true. And it needs to be convincing. Argument by definition is not very convincing. So I don't care what the IDers think. The other things I noted here, Deidre Wilson and wrote some things on this. Language is not a code. They actually said coded communication works best when the emitter and receiver share exactly the same code. Any difference between the emitter and sender's code is a possible source of error in the communication process. That's why each has a code book that they use. Quote, human language is not a code. True codes have a one-to-one course relationship with meaning. And that meaning is what's important here. One-to-one relationship with meaning. When I convey that car is supposed to represent nuclear weapon, there's meaning there, right? There's no meaning by just a symbol inherent to that symbology. And you talked about how it's not symbols. Yes, it's semiotics. And semiotics is literally dealing with symbols. So when you're talking about codes, you're dealing with symbology, right? What you're doing is you're taking Shannon's information theory and you're inappropriately relating it to symbology because you're saying there's information in the system. There's information by which these animals communicate with each other. Yes, they have chemical and pheromones they released, and they communicate with each other. I think you're using the word code so loosely that it applies to literally anything at that point. I'm using it in a very specific way. So when you're talking about all these things like quorum sensing, I don't see how it relates in any way, shape, or form to the topic of a DNA as a code. Let's assume there are natural codes. I'm not going to argue either way on that. I'm agnostic on that particular point of view. But if it is the case that it requires an intelligence, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't help the ID argument at all. It's not a convincing argument to me. Does that make sense?
Steve, you have somebody, and this will let me just break in real quick because there's a super chat that kind of is relevant to what Steve just said. It said, Steve, do you have a specific definition of code that you use?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. I have a couple, and this is the problem. It depends on what definition you use. He's arguing a specific thing that definitely, I'm saying it depends what you use.
Even one of those couple? If you have a couple.
Yeah. There's a couple. Okay. The main one is this. A system
does
of
what
words,
John
letters,
is talking.
Go ahead.
Does what John's explaining fit any of those couple definitions?
Well, yes. The same way by which a legal code is. He's talking about a legal code, but we're not talking. You say, is DNA a code like a legal code? A code means something you have to abide by doing. You have to obey the law because there's a codification of the law, right? It's codified. That's a completely different meaning. That's an equivocation problem there because that's not what we're talking about in semiotics. That's not what we're talking about in information theory nor in cryptography. It's a completely different meaning of the word. So he's meaning by which something has to be a signal to do something or an abidance by which you have to obey something. One of the things, the definition for code is programming instructions, right? Or a system, a collection of laws, statutes. Or this one, a set of conventions or moral principles governing behavior in a particular sphere. DNA doesn't apply to any of those things, right? So we're asking if DNA is a code. That has nothing to do with those definitions. And I think he's using a weird definition that doesn't apply when it comes to DNA.
I am using Claude Shannon's definition of a code, which is that a code is a set of rules governing a communication system. That is what a code is. And that is what the genetic code is.
But that's the problem. That's like saying the legal system is a set of code by which we have to obey ourselves in society. Therefore, DNA is a code, and it's a legal code. No, it's not. These are completely different meanings of the word. I think you're equivocating on this. Grossly, a matter of fact, because Claude Shannon was not a biologist. He's talking about information system, and I don't think he ever argued DNA was a code. Matter of fact, again, Crick himself argued it's not a code, and he's a biologist. He's the one that discovered the structure of DNA.
Yeah, Crick doesn't understand communication systems. That's why he didn't know that. But Richard Dawkins was
DNA.
A computer
DNA's
programmer.
Biology.
Hold on, Steve.
Richard Dawkins was a computer programmer and a biologist, and so Richard Dawkins understood perfectly well that the genetic code is a code. That's why he wrote an entire chapter.
I don't think that's what he said. I think you're reading it incorrectly. It's digital format.
You can read it.
Again,
there's a PDF online. It's free.
I have read it. But again, I think that you're seeing the word code and you're not taking it heuristically. You're not taking it as an analogy a lot of times. Again, the only thing that's actually a code in cryptography would be that ATC in G letters. That's what a code means. And I think you're just throwing everything in, information, sender, receiver. By the way, even with a sender and receiver, when you do coding, we create the sender and receiver to understand something. So even if computer sends it to a computer, it took an intelligence to make that computer understand the other computer in that regard.
Yeah.
You're saying, you use the analogy that a ribosome is an agent recently, right, on Facebook, which I didn't understand because a ribosome is not an agent. It can be a receiver for information, but it cannot be an agent the way Claude Shannon was classifying as an agent, because he used the term agent, meaning agency, meaning an intelligence or human being, from sender to receiver, two people communicating.
That's
that
where
was
you're
from
wrong.
His paper. That's
yeah,
from his
wrong.
Paper.
No. From his paper, he says it could be a person or a thing can be the receiver.
No, the transmitter you're incorrect. The transmitter could be a thing. The transmitter could be a thing. The agent.
Want me to pull up the paper? I can pull up the paper.
Yes, I've read
for
it.
All right. Let me pull it up for you.
My goodness. All right. Things are getting heated. Oh my goodness. Is DNA a code? Is it not a code? What definition of code are we using to decide if DNA is a code?
Okay. On page two, and you didn't have to read very far. He says that the destination is the person or thing for whom the message is intended.
In this particular case, the destination, right? The destination is the like a receiving not the agent, but like a computer, right? That's the destination. But who created the computer? You're assuming that the destination. Look what it says for send and receiver. I read what you're reading. Read what it says for
right,
the agent.
Let me read the receiver. Let's read the receiver. The receiver ordinarily performs the inverse operation of that done by the transmitter, reconstructing the message from the signal.
Right, exactly. But the agents that he's talking about are the people, right? You don't say that a computer is an agent.
Why does it
have
to be people?
Why does it have to be a person?
Because when you use the word agent, that implies agency, the ability to think on your own, right? A computer doesn't do that. We have to establish the format by which a computer receives something.
Could you be imbuing that meaning onto his paper, though? Like, could you be imbuing that meaning onto it based on your understanding?
I've asked people about this. I've actually asked.
Argument from authority.
But yes. Yes, Kyle.
Yeah.
Kyle's on top.
Yeah, I will. I say that because this
I've
is how
asked
you do
people,
stuff.
Isn't it?
But you have to have an intent here. You have to have an agency, right? There, if I want to communicate something to Shannon, there's an intentionality there for me to say I need her to understand my message, right? There's nothing between the ribosome and the DNA that has that intentionality.
So you're saying, in order for there to be a code, there needs to be intent from the sender.
In the strictest sense of the word, I think so. Yes.
Okay. Well, now I don't want to get into an argument of teleology here, but what we find when we study the origin of life is that as soon as you have descent with modification acted upon by natural selection, nature selects for things that are good at surviving and reproducing. And when you look at them do their thing, it looks like they're doing it on purpose. It looks like they have purpose. It looks like they have intent. Things can evolve. I mean, you and I are evolved creatures, so our intents are actually evolved intents. much of them, the base intentions that we have. The gene is trying, I mean, the gene is holding information that is to be sent out to the ribosome so the ribosome can decode it into a protein. And the whole purpose of this is survival and reproduction. So,
okay, well, the problem I have with that is you're trying to relate, like you said, teleonomics with teleology, right? The teleology would be something of an agency that designed something. But teleonomics doesn't require
we're
that.
We're not nature,
well, yeah, but this is interesting. The nature can design something, right? But that doesn't mean it has to have an actual agency. There's no agency in teleonomics. That's what Darwin was brilliant in pointing out, that natural selection can do this without intentionality, without agency. That's why Darwin's was so unique for the time, because everybody at the time thought it was theologically only. They only thought theology would be the only way this could operate, this could work. And he said, no, we have something that has the appearance of agency, but it's not agency.
Yes.
It's not intentionality, right? And so
when
you're talking about this, the things that you're looking at, you're making the same mistake I think the intelligent design advocates are making, because there is no intentionality there. There's no intent.
No. What I'm saying is that it's not true intention. There's no being on top of it telling things that wants stuff to happen.
Right.
The intent,
right,
if you want to call it intent, evolved, because these are the sorts of things that evolution does. It produces these sorts of things. So the fact that you think that it needs to be a person that is communicating code is just wrong. I mean, it says right here, person or thing, literally in black and white on the page, right here.
I understand that, but as I've tried to explain, by the way, I did say a thing. I read it before, so I knew what it said. A thing. That's why I asked the experts.
Jesus.
Or thing is the fact that you have a computer, which is the thing designed by a higher agency, right? We designed that thing, so it still requires some kind of intentionality behind it. You're just looking at it and going, it doesn't have to be a human. That's true, but who designed the computer?
I just explained to you that bacteria
that
can communicate.
Has agency.
Steve,
do you think that
he just started talking?
I never said that a ribosome has agency. Today, like, I don't know if
no, but
I said that
prior. And,
oh my god!
Okay,
Dave.
Prior said that, so I was
okay.
Kind of confused.
So
we're gonna
think
have to,
that.
All right,
have
so
to
so let's talk about the agency that a ribosome has, then, if that's what you want to talk about. So, the ribosome itself, it can only do one thing. Within a specific environment, it can only do one thing. It can only do what it's evolved to do, which is to take a messenger RNA and convert that into a protein. That's what it can do. But across generations, you could say it has agency, because mutations can slightly tweak it, and natural selection will then select for versions that are better at surviving and reproducing. The differences that exist in the genetic code, you talked about this earlier. What is one of your arguments to say that the genetic code is not really a genetic code, is that there's different versions of the genetic code in different organisms. That's true. There's also different versions of binary code. You know, we use ASCII code, that's the American Standard Code, but there's other versions of binary code. These are just different. The rules are different. A code, again, is the set of rules that govern a communication system. That's what we're talking about when we talk about code in computer science.
Yeah, that's the equivocation problem. And by the way, agency by definition requires a consciousness.
Okay.
You have to
Steve,
have a consciousness of agency.
Steve, let him. Okay, go ahead, John, and then I will throw it to Steve. Finish your thought, John, and then I'll throw it to Steve again.
Okay, let's not use agency because you don't like that word. Let's say degrees of freedom. The only degrees of freedom that a ribosome has are those that accumulate across generations through mutation. The genetic code can change across generations through mutation. And it's mutations in tRNA will cause a change in the genetic code. That's how new dialects evolve. New versions of the genetic code evolve through mutations in transfer RNA. That's how they evolve. And if anyone wants a more in-depth explanation of how tRNA works and the ribosome, the whole translation system, I did a video yesterday, actually, on the Stated Casually channel. And I've got a video on the Stated Clearly channel called What is DNA and How Does It Work? But
You're just trying to explain the redundancy and the degeneracy of the code on itself, right? You're trying to explain why different species may code for a different amino acid, right?
Yeah, and so our mitochondria, for example.
And why you might have three letters code for a different amino acid.
Because right. The rules,
again, third base
the rules level, that
that's
govern
through,
the
that's through evolution.
The rules that govern, the communication system will evolve slightly. Yes.
Rules as a code is only one of the most loosest definitions. Because again, we have rules in law.
Yeah.
We have a codification of law. That's not how we use the terminology
the definition,
when it comes to DNA.
It's the definition used by Claude Shannon in communication theory. So if you don't like it, that's fine.
I mean,
that's what people
may,
are talking about when they talk about code.
Like you said, like an instruction set is a set of code, right? How to do something. But this is not how any biologist that I've talked to, and I've talked to three biologists with PhDs so far, none of them use it this way. So, I mean, if Claude
and none
Shannon
of them understand communication theory. But Richard Dawkins does, which is why he wrote an entire chapter on it.
All right.
I think they kind of do.
Let everybody finish the thoughts. Steve, go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead,
I'm good. I'm done.
All right, Steve?
You're good? Okay.
You're done? Okay.
I have a question. Kyle, do you have
question
a super chat or anything? Because if not, I have a question.
No, I was going to let Steve finish up his point. I didn't know he was finished with his thought. So go ahead, Shannon.
Okay. So here's my question. I think this is kind of an all-important question. So essentially, Steve, what you're saying is just definitionally, by the stringent or strict definition, because colloquially, I think you would agree that a lot of people would say that the genetic code is a code. That's why it's called a code. So colloquially, based on, you know, a general understanding, a lot of people would, and John would probably argue that even more than that, he would expound upon that more people would even on a finite level would call it a code, because you take information, that information is transmitted and deciphered and ends up in something that is predictable based on how the letter sequences appear. So like if the letter sequences appear in a certain way, like CTAG, you will see something, a protein, be produced consistently because it's translated into that protein consistently. So like that, to me, that sounds like a code, and I'm no biologist. You essentially, it seems like a semantic argument to my mind, to my sad little non-biologist mind, that it's not a code. It's essentially what you would call a cipher. So it's just a minor shift in definitional terms. You would probably say it's not minor, but for somebody like me, from the outside looking in, that seems like a minor semantic shift in definitional terms that might be moderately frustrating.
I'm using it. I'm gleaning what you're saying. I groke. Okay. I'm using the most strictest forms of terms here, but I have to ask you, when you say the genetic code is a code, what do you mean by genetic code?
I mean the chart of codons.
No, what does she
the genetic
mean
code is these. Which,
no, hang on. She asked the question, so I want to know what she means by you, because she said if you ask anybody if the genetic code is a code, well, when you say
like
that, what
person
do you mean by the genetic code? But what is the genetic code?
I'm not talking.
He's
about
saying
DNA.
It's the codon chart.
So when the RNA goes through the ribosome, the RNA, the letter sequence on the RNA is being read by the ribosome, and the ribosome is turning that into a protein. And it's turning it into a type of protein consistently based on the letter sequence that it's reading on the RNA. Does that make sense? I may be misconstruing that.
I'm not professing
to be an
expert. No, this is my summation. The genetic code, when I think of the genetic code, I think of the letters A, T, G, and C. Those are a code. Those are secondary symbols representing a primary symbol. No problem.
When did they
those
stop being a code?
When you talk about information. When you're just talking about the information that's flowing from one point to another point, that's not a code. That's information in the system. That's not transportable. You can't take that information and convert it to binary. Codes have to be transportable. You have to be able to convert it from one form to another. You can't do that in this particular case.
So
I can convert the ATs,
can't put it into
GNC
a computer, and a computer could make a protein? Just because there's one thing that can decipher
I have
the code
information
and,
that DNA,
and turn it into a protein.
How do you convert, if I say DNA is in, there's code in DNA, how do I convert that into Braille?
Right.
the only thing that's the Braille's going to show is something that represents A, T, G, and C, correct?
Because it's not linguistic information. Braille is linguistic communication information.
And that's
so
why
code we're back is to codes can only be linguistic by your definition.
And by the way, I'm not arguing that DNA is a cipher, or I'm not arguing that this all is a cipher. I'm arguing that it could be a cipher, maybe a code in the loosest definition, but it's pseudocode, pseudo cipher. It's not really one or the other in many ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm arguing that the genetic code.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm arguing that the genetic code. That is a code. The genetic code, that codon chart, the set of rules that govern the way that the genome communicates with the ribosome, that code is a code in exactly the same way that binary code is a code. It is a code according to the rules, according to the definition by Claude Shannon.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Now it's up to people to go look into this and decide for themselves. I think you're close there, Shannon. I have to agree with Shannon. I like the way she gave her final thing on that. I think you got it pretty much.
I don't. Yeah. Well, I guess. Sure. All right. I'm still not clear on when it stops being a code or if it is, but I appreciate both of you.
It depends on what you mean by stop. What do you mean by stop? Because there's.
Well, he said that he agrees that the letters. He agrees that the letters on the RNA sequence are a code, right? The letters are a code.
What do you mean by letters?
Define letters. Or you in this case, the RNA, because obviously you don't have T in RNA. That's a code.
So the letter sequence on the RNA as it goes through the ribosome, that is a code. So the letters themselves are a code.
Nothing going through the ribosome is a code.
No, they're not. No. The letters on the RNA are a code, are they not?
Well, hang on. One sec. There's actually no letters on the RNA. They're chemicals. They're nucleotides,
right? Yeah, I
understand. The only thing, letters on a piece of paper.
That the letter G isn't written on a goddamn RNA.
That's why the language is so loose. That is why we have these issues, because language is so poor for these types of things.
Guanine is on RNA, right? Am I wrong about that?
Yes, the chemicals on there. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll stick with that. Guanine, right? Okay, so that's one of the chemicals that's on RNA, right?
Yeah,
so
that's one of the nucleobases.
You agree that is a portion of a code, at least.
No.
Is it not? It's not okay. No. Well, then what
symbol,
did you say earlier?
The symbol, symbols, okay. If you look at symbol, A, T, okay. G, and C, those symbols, that's the code, the symbology.
So those symbols are us transmitting. I get what you're saying now. So those symbols are us as humans giving a letter representation, a symbol. Let me finish my sentence so that I can actually agree with you, Steve, for the love of Jesus. So that letter is us as humans giving that chemical a symbol so that we can transmit the information that represents to ourselves. So the chemical itself is not a code, but when we translate it into those letters, it becomes a code because that's something that we use to understand how that works. It's just a translation. Yeah, okay. Right. I understand
what's that. Happened
was a code for water, right? That's a symbol.
No, no. Okay. So what's happened here? Here's where you're confused. If you pull up my slide again, if we can actually look at the genetic code, you could actually draw this by, instead of drawing C-U-U, you could actually draw those three nucleotides instead. And then instead of doing the amino acid L-E-U, you could actually draw that amino acid. So if we were to replace these with actual drawings of those things instead of the letters, what would that do for you?
Well, you
actually draw out the molecule.
The amino acid. The amino acids have the same basic structure, right? It has a COOH and the NH2, and then it has your R group, right? Your residue, right? So they're all amino acids are the same thing, except the residue changes, correct? They're on the same basic structure, right?
Amino acids have different amino acids have different side chains.
The side chain, which is your R group, is your residue, right?
Yeah.
But the other structure, the NH2 and the COOH on amino acids are exactly the same. All amino acids are identical except for that side chain, right? And that's what changes. Okay, that's one of the reasons why proteins fold the way they do.
You're not answering my question. Just listen to my question here. If I were to draw this exact same chart, but instead of using letters, I used actual drawings of each molecule, what would that do for you? Would that make this no longer a code?
Yeah, that's just.
So you're saying that's just pictures. You're saying that this is a code. You're saying that this is a code because there's letters on it. But if I swap those letters out with drawings of molecules, would it no longer be a code?
Yeah, because a code has to have conveyance of a meaning, right? And like a word.
Yeah.
Like again, my example with the car and nuclear weapon. Car conveys a meaning to nuclear weapon. Just a symbol. That's more of a cipher than anything. You're dealing with taking one thing and you're converting it into a different symbol. That's a ciphering. That's how
Do you speak more than one language?
Yeah, language is not a code, but I know I speak
a
little
Spanish. More than one language.
Okay. So
you seem really hung up on what a symbol can be. A symbol doesn't have to be a letter. A symbol can be anything.
I understand that.
An apple. Apple can be a symbol.
Yeah, I get that. In a code.
All right, listen.
Steve, let him finish. Yes.
You have to let John finish his thought. He is very patient and lets you finish your thoughts. Just let him finish his thought. Stop interrupting him, please.
Yes.
John, go ahead.
In the genetic code, molecules are used as symbols. The codon, the three molecules, do not actually represent serine, the amino acid. They are not actually serine, the amino acid. They are a symbol for serine that the ribosome understands. The ribosome receives that, and I'm going to anthropomorphize it here, a bit here. It says, oh, I need to grab a serine. And so it grabs a serine, and it adds it to the protein chain. Now, of course, you and I know mechanically how that all works. But the codon, the three nucleotides, act as a symbol in this communication system. And this chart shows us the rules that it shows us what all those symbols mean. But they are symbols.
I think you're just wrong on that. I think all you're doing is you're saying these are my instruction sets and I'm calling that a code. And that's not what a code is. Instruction set is not a code unless you're looking at the actual like an assembly, like CMP or JNZ. Those are a code because that's the symbology that represents something else, right? And the fact that they're rules, that's not the code. The rules are not the code. I mean, maybe in a legal sense, but this is not even a legal sense.
In a Claude Shannon sense, he literally describes it that way. By Claude Shannon's definition, a code is the set of rules governing a communication system.
Yeah, I think he's using it a little bit different way than you think. But anyways, that's my presentation. And we'll let kind of people go from there.
I think you guys are going to agree.
Well, I don't know how many times I could tell him that I think he's equivocating.
It's becoming circular. It's becoming really.
Yeah, we need to get hashtag Team Cypher and hashtag Team Code t-shirts made up.
I'm not arguing with the cipher either. I think it's kind of neither in the big picture. I think they're pseudo cipher or pseudo code. I think we have limitations in the English language that prevent us from adequately describing certain things. And this is one of those cases where I think that there's limitations because there's so many different ways to describe something linguistically and from different fields that these words mean different things.
Let me just end by saying why I think this matters, because I think that's something that I haven't really said yet today. The genetic code, like all codes, is arbitrary. You could invent a cell that uses a completely different set of rules. This chart that we're looking at here would be completely different. You could create a cell that uses a completely different set. We've actually learned already that some organisms use a different set. So they already exist, even in nature. The genetic code is a set of symbols that the genome uses to communicate with the ribosome. What does it communicate about? It communicates about the structure of a protein. It communicates that across. It transmits that from the genome to the ribosome. The reason this is so important is that this communication system is complicated. Not only that, it's optimized. I didn't talk about the optimization of coding systems, but you can make any symbol mean anything if you are inventing a coding system. But some symbols, if you use them a lot, you want them to be easier to use. So in Morse code, for example, E, which is the most common letter ever sent in Morse code, in English at least, is represented by one dot. and they optimized it that like that on purpose for ease of use. And the genome, the genetic code that we're looking at right here, this chart here, these are actually optimized as well. And they are optimized for so that the ribosome doesn't misread things. The ribosome is not a perfect machine. It misreads things sometimes. And this is optimized in a way that it doesn't screw up when it's misreading. This is a complicated communication system, and we need an explanation as to how it arose. And people who are studying the origin of life are doing that, and they're spending a lot of time and a lot of money doing that. And that's why I think it's important to just disregard it and say, oh, it's not a code because some creationist made an argument that I don't know how to rebut. That's really silly. Like, this is a real code, and we want to understand where it came from. We want to understand how it evolved. And people studying the origin of life are trying to do that right now. There's researchers working on that. So,
let me reiterate here that this has nothing to do with intelligent design. I'm not an intelligent design advocate. I don't give a crap what their arguments are. I will go after people for bad arguments, whether they're intelligent designer, atheist, theist. It doesn't matter to me. I don't think this has anything to do with intelligent design. So if they are using this for their bad arguments or whatever, that's irrelevant to what I think, right? And so I don't know why that straw man keeps getting brought up. If intelligent
design, I'm bringing that up because people keep saying that online. Every time I hear the argument that code's not a code. Yeah, but
it's not a code because it's not a code. It has nothing to do with the idea.
90% of your listeners are it's because of that argument.
And
genetic code is a real code.
One sec. I think atheists, I think they make a lot of bad arguments, right? And I call them out on it all the time. So it's not like I'm afraid to call the atheists out for bad arguments. This is not a bad argument by them. It's not a code. I disagree with you on that.
Can I ask one question?
I don't think it's atheists. I think it's biologists. We'll call it not a code.
You disagree?
In the true sense.
What?
Steve, what is it then? If it's not a code, concisely, what is it?
It has elements of both depending on what definitions you use from what field.
Oh, dear Lord Jesus. What is it?
Oh, okay. That is like...
It's DNA.
I'm sorry.
It's a chemical.
I'm sorry.
It's a macromolecule.
It could be comprised of different elements from other places, and you say that he's wrong for using it from another place. That doesn't make sense.
Does everybody here know what plain text is? Does everyone here know what plain text is?
I have no idea. No. I don't know.
Because I got some plain text for Steve and John. There's 2 minutes left before 10 o'clock Eastern time. That's how much time you have left on my machine. That's plain text.
Yeah. Well, David is putting us on timeout.
Well, no,
we're not going to cut it off at 10. Hold on, let me interrupt. We're not going to cut it off at 10. We're going to go until we get we get our thoughts out.
I'm just making a joke.
I think it's just physiochemical reactions. I think that DNA is just a macromolecule that has the ability to produce proteins, and that's all through conformational changes. And that's what the information is that anything Shannon even refers to is that there has to be some kind of intentionality there. Shannon, if I remember correctly, doesn't mention, he either says intent or intentionality. That's a critical thing because there is no intent. There is no agency. There is no intentionality in things like ribosomes, even in a teleological, excuse me, a teleonomic type thing. There's no agency there. And yes, agency requires some kind of consciousness. That's literally what the word means, to be able to change your brain state.
No.
To decide. There is definitely information. Yeah, absolutely.
There's information that's being translated into proteins consistently.
Yeah, like,
the same sequence will be translated, for lack of a better term, into the same proteins consistently. But that's you can understand how it's complex for me to not understand how that's not a code when it's consistently translated into the same thing. Information arbitrator that translates that information, output consistently the same. Right? Information, something that translates that information, output consistently the same, but not the same as the information.
But the information is not the code.
Okay.
No, I do know what I do know what information is. Information is what's required to describe the state of a system.
I don't understand why it's not, though. Like, can you for a layperson like me, this seems like semantics.
It's not.
But you can't tell me what it is. It's not a code. It's definitely not a code. What is it? I don't know.
Not the true definition. Yeah, not in the strictest sense. It's not a code. Now, information, again, when Shannon's talking about this, Shannon's talking about Shannon. yeah. We're talking about entropic states. We're talking about the entropy of a system, right? And the entropy is the unusable energy in a system. In this case, how much is wasted? How much is lost by sending information through a noisy channel, right? When a noisy channel is you need more bits of information than you normally would use in a clean channel, right? Because of what's called entropy. And what I described in my presentation, that for four nucleotides, you need two bits of information, right? That's the minimal amount to convey information. But the code is the C, T, G, and A. The 00, the 01, that's not the code, right? The code is what I'm coding for is for the nucleotides. The information is just what it is to get to 00001. That information, that signal in there, if you ever look at discrete signal processing between like a quad operational amplifier or any kind of electronics, you have a lot of signal processing, right? Information that's in those discrete systems is not ever called code. I've never seen code used in electronics that way.
So if you're looking at the Turing model, right? The Turing model. If you look at the Turing model, the computer is a ribosome to me. Like his computer is a ribosome. Nazi information, Turing's computer, output protein.
And the difference is that we designed a computer. We are the agent.
This is why John brought that up, because it all comes down to, well, then that means there's a designer. Why does there have
no,
to
not
be?
No, that, it to doesn't be have to be.
Well, again, then why can't it be a code? I'm so confused.
A code, right? I mean, even if that's the case, even if you take the syllogism as is, right, it's not a very convincing syllogism because you're just doing it based upon descriptive definitions, right? It's not a convincing syllogism at all.
Is that not analogous?
I'm defining a word to mean this in my premise. I'm defining it this way. And so the conclusion
system.
Is based upon that definition.
System,
okay, great. But I can define it some other way and it no longer works. Right? These are all
the
kinds
of questions. I can match those systems. Okay, go ahead.
Let me ask this question from the live chat real quick, just because I think it is prevalent. They asked, would you consider it fair to say that we have codified our understanding of DNA by creating a model that is represented in code? I think it's fair to say it's codified.
As an analogy, codified just means to have a specific set of rules, right? That's what codification means, right? If I codify something, I am writing it down and saying you have to obey these rules. That's what code is in that regard. So we have done that And again,
John,
that's a codification because that's not what
you
mean by DNA is a code. DNA is not a legal code. It's not a codified system like that.
Okay. There is a very specific set of rules that the ribosome uses with chain of RNA. So the chain of RNA, the messenger RNA, that is the message. And the ribosome is using a very specific set of rules to read that message and output a protein. The code is
written.
Those rules are
code on chart.
The rules exist in the structure of tRNA. That's where they actually exist in the cell. But in a textbook, they're going to exist in the codon chart. The codon chart is what we use to show each other the code that governs the genetic system.
And here's the – can I respond?
Sure.
Yeah.
Hello?
Okay. Yeah.
So the difference is you're looking at a descriptive system. We're looking at something and going, we're describing what we're seeing. We're making the codon chart. Nothing about that's prescriptive, right? The rules of how things work do not have to obey that codon chart. It's that we look at that codon chart and we came up with the codon chart because we observed something. You're confusing descriptive with prescriptive. And for a set of rules in a codification, that's
– You are wrong.
Hang on. I'm not wrong. That's prescriptive, meaning I'm not wrong on this. Prescriptive means this is how it has to be. We're defining something to be the case that you have to obey a set of rules. That's prescriptive. Codon chart is not prescriptive. It's descriptive. It doesn't change the reality. If I change that codon chart, if I make something else, reality is not going to change. It is not prescriptive. That's the biggest difference I think you're missing.
The tRNA, the three nucleotides in a tRNA, and the tRNA that attaches to serine determine which three nucleotides in the messenger RNA can code for serine. They are determining that. They are prescribing that. It is the structure of the tRNA that's prescribing that.
Yeah, you're not understanding what I'm
saying.
We are then
describing it. No, I understand. We then described it in figuring out what the tRNA is prescribing. And we write that down as a chart. Okay? And our chart is a description of the actual rules that are governing the transcription system or the translation system.
That's not for prescription.
So you're right. You're right. We've got a chart that is describing a real thing that actually exists in your cells, a real set of rules that actually exist in your cells that are governing the communication system. Like, who are the rulers of that communication system? That would be the tRNA. They are dictating what that actual system is. They're the kings of it, if you want to say.
That reality has to follow. We don't write the rules. No, nothing's writing the rules. They're from an evolutionary. They're from an evolutionary project, a process that's coming out by emergent things. There's no directionality there. There's no direct communication in that system. It's all because of an emergent thing. There's nothing saying this has to be this way. As you even said, it's arbitrary. Prescriptive means that it is this way. We are saying it must be this way because we've decreed it to be this way. There's nothing decreeing it to be that way. It is that way because it's an emergent thing from evolution.
If you mutate a tRNA and change the genetic code by mutating it, the organism will die immediately. Well, as soon as the proteins that it produces fail.
I'm not saying that relative to what I just said.
Because this coding system is governing how our cells work.
So I'm saying it works consistently and accurately, like it consistently the rules as we understand them continue to be adhered to, then it produces accurate genetic information that we're able to use to continue to survive. So it seems that this argument, if I'm not mistaken, seems to be hinging on whether or not it was created by somebody, and that's the only way something can be a code. So a code can be not created by... Steve, can you give me an example of a code that wasn't created by a mind?
If you remember, if you rewind the tape and you remember going in, I wasn't going to argue whether it required a mind or not. I actually said that at the very beginning for this very reason. Right? I'm not going to argue whether it requires a code or not. I can argue if it does require a code, then it's this. If it doesn't, if it does require an intelligence, this. If it doesn't, then this. But I don't have a stand on it either way if you want to use code as if it requires an intelligence or not. It depends on what area that you're coming from. As simple as that.
But you'll excuse me if it seems like a lot of your arguments seem to kind of hinge on an intelligent sender and an intelligent receiver and an intelligent
person. Most of it does
when
it comes to things like a code. Yeah.
Yeah.
Most
okay.
Of it does.
But you won't give a definition of a code that doesn't require an intelligent mind.
I don't know any off the top of my head. If there are some, I'm willing to accept that, and it doesn't change my argument in any way.
Okay.
I'm not arguing there. I'm not arguing based on natural codes. I'm not arguing that. There might be. I don't know of any, and I'm not concerned about that because it doesn't change my argument if there is.
Okay. No,
the genetic
code
is one of many codes that was not designed. Yeah. It's one of many codes that was not designed. Again, communication systems and the rules that govern them throughout biology.
So, John, for you, a code is. Because there was lots of people in the chat, and I feel like I've been picking on Steve. Just because I like picking on Steve. People have been arguing. People in the chat have been saying that essentially me too, because I understand better. That your definition is overly ambiguous, and it allows it to be translated to any time information is transmitted and received, then that can be defined as a code. And then that it becomes too easily overextended in those circumstances. Because what are all chemical reactions a code?
No, a chemical reaction is not a code.
Okay.
Again.
Why?
So if you look at the codon chart, there are symbols. So the three nucleotides in the genetic code are symbols that represent an amino acid. They are symbols. In a chemical reaction, you don't have symbols. In the genetic code, you have real symbols. And again, is there a communication system? The definition of a code is a set of rules that govern a communication system. For a communication system, you need a sender, a receiver. You need to transmit that information across a channel. Like that was already described. The definition that I'm using is the definition that Claude Shannon uses. And it's the definition that gave rise to the digital revolution. This allowed people to realize that, look, we don't have to we can invent codes out of pretty much anything. We can have two machines talk to each other. We don't need an intelligent person to intervene. We can have machines talk to other machines if we have a code, a set of rules that governs that communication. They can talk to each other. This was a huge deal. And that's why Claude Shannon is so, famous among people that study computer science.
Well, Shannon's awesome.
If I could say something real quick, I think you just kind of shot yourself in the foot by what you just said, because you just said chemical reactions are a code, but the process of the central dogma of biology from DNA to mRNA to protein, that whole transcription to translation, is one big chemical reaction. It's one big exchanging of information of how to do conformational changes. It's physiochemical.
Yes.
That's why chemical reactions are not a code. There's no code in that system. The code is what we interpret and we give it meaning.
No, you're wrong. So a chemical reaction is not necessarily a code. There are chemical reactions in the genetic code, but a chemical reaction is not a code. A code, again, let me just say this super slow, is a set of rules governing a communication system. So if chemical reactions are involved in that, that's fine.
So, reaction in and of
itself is not a code.
To form water. Those are obey chemical rules. That's code.
You have to repeat that. He had you muted. You have to repeat that. Yeah. Nobody just called the tail end of that.
So the rules for like two hydrogen and oxygen coming together to form water, there's rules involved in that because it's a chemical process that must follow a certain thing. I mean, you put hydrogen and oxygen together in the right conditions and they form a water molecule. There's rules of chemistry that dictate that. That's a code?
No, because it's not a communication system.
It's communicating how to make the molecule.
No.
What's the difference?
It's not a communication system. There's not two entities that are communicating to each other. In the genome, there are two entities communicating to each other. No. It is not a communication system. I showed you a chart of a communication system in Claude Shannon's paper. I defined it very specifically. Why do you not understand this? You even watched me take my talk yesterday.
I asked him that question like 5 times a day.
I've read his stuff and I've actually had discussions with people who are PhDs on this that are disagreeing with you. So if I don't understand and they don't understand, I'm cool with that.
You talk to biologists that don't understand
about
communication
DNA,
systems.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
What are the two entities that are communicating with one another in order for that chemical reaction to not fit the qualifications of any other chemical reaction?
The genome is communicating by sending a message, by transcribing a message into RNA, sending that message, transmitting it through the cell to the ribosome. So you have the genome and you have the ribosome. These are the two entities that are communicating to each other. What are they communicating about? They are communicating about the structure of a protein. That's what they're talking about.
So there's a purpose in the transmission.
Yeah. I mean, you're using teleological language, which a lot of people don't like using in biology. But yes, the point is to communicate the structure of a protein.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So we're gonna go ahead, Shannon.
No, I don't even know anymore. I don't even know how to define the word code anymore, to be honest with you.
Moose cars and driveways, mountains, and mailbox. As long as words don't mean anything, I'm just going to spout them out. You know, because definition doesn't mean definition. And,
no, words don't mean words.
If you thought that we couldn't, that we were winding down, you're wrong, because the people in the live chat want a after show. So we will be having an after show on this channel to bring in people from the live chat that want to hash it out further. Of course, everybody in the
dear sweet Jesus
invited. and we'll see how that goes.
I promised I wouldn't drink today. Guys,
it's a holiday.
I'm going to let these guys wrap up their points. And I'm going to ask that they be allowed to make their entire argument, or not argument, but their entire closing statement without interruption. Please, Steve.
Go ahead, John.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I'll just say I think I've explained it too many times in the same way, so there's no point in doing it again. But there... one thing that might help for people, something that I didn't get to, is how it is that DNA codes for protein very specifically. And I didn't bother doing that today because Steve had gone over it. But I did a video yesterday showing exactly what all the molecules look like, showing how the entire thing happens start to finish, that people can go ahead and watch on the Stated Casually channel. That's called What is the Genetic Code? And so if you want to understand more how the physical processes work, all communication systems work through physical processes. I'm talking right now. It's a physical process. I'm using sound waves as symbols in this communication system. DNA uses codons as symbols. So it uses molecules as symbols. The entire process of communicating it's always a physical process. The same is true in the genetic code, and you can learn about that process on that video. So,
okay, see.
I think the real question here, though, is do colors exist? I think that's really what it boils down to. you know, all I got to say on this is, look at, you know, any minor issue or mistake that I may have had as a layperson, I'm cool with that. I'm open to correction. If people want to like say, well, you know what, you're right on that, a little bit wrong on that, I'm totally cool with that. But when people go vote on this, all I ask is, who do you think had a better presentation and what makes more sense to you? I think that I clearly pointed out that DNA is not a code. I think that fortunately, John has a lot of misconceptions when it comes to the relating information to code and signaling and all this. And he's looking at it from a very myopic point of view of just Claude Shannon rather than the bigger picture of DNA itself and what a code is and isn't in semiotics and what it is in cryptography, because this is what it mainly coding has to do with cryptography more than anything else, right? You're taking something and you're converting it to something else for whatever purpose. But you had asked earlier, Shannon, I'm going to leave you with this for a definition of something. And I thought this was interesting. One of the definitions that's out there for encode is to convert a message into a code or to another language or to an, okay. And I think that's the problem here. He's thinking this because of the conversion. There's something being converted from one thing to another that has to be a code, and it's not, it's an or. And so just because you're changing something from one form to another and you're changing it across a system from two things, a sender and receiver, inherently doesn't make it a code. It just makes it information transfer. So I leave it at that.
Okay, John, I fucked it up the first time. What is the appropriate word, the poll that I'll put up in Twitter based on the conversation? Is the genetic code a code? Would that be?
Yeah, that would work.
Okay. All right, so guys, I'll put that up here.
Well, hang on. I disagree. I don't like that title because the genetic code is a code. This is critical. If you change it to that, I agree because the genetic code is ATG and C is a code. So again, what do you mean by genetic code?
I'm gonna pull my fucking hair out.
You can't change it to something completely different that makes it a different question. As in, I agree with the genetic code. If ATG and C is a code.
That's his
Steve, how would you word the question then? Steve, how would you word the question?
Do not watch the same debate that I just did.
I'll tell you what. I'm so convinced that I've put forth a better argument and that more people will be convinced that it's not a code. Word it the way you wish. I'll let the people decide.
Oh, my God.
You could just ask it, Team Steve, Team John, right? I guess.
Yeah. You know, that's better. Because if you ask the question, is genetic code a code? Again, you're mad at the difference what you mean by code. If they think ATG and Z, ATG and C, then yes, it's a code.
That's it. I'm going to start drinking.
That's the question there.
I don't even care what time of day it is. I don't care.
Okay, well,
anymore.
guys, you can find that on Twitter here in the next 5 minutes. I'm so confused, Steve, right now. I'm so lost.
We'll let the experts come in and sort it all out. How about that?
Yeah.
Sound good?
Oh, Herman's dying in the chat. Herman is dying.
Argument.
Team Steve, though.
So we will be having an after show here in about 30 minutes. We will start it up. I will, for the guys on the call, I'll put the link to it in Twitter, in the DMs that our group chat. And then if you are wanting to actually be in the call, you're a Patreon, you get choice to come in, and then I know Dr. Mays, CRISPR. I'm not sure if Dr. Mays. I didn't see where he answered if he wanted to come in or not. But if you do, Dr. Mays, send me a message on Twitter, DM Twitter. And Twitter, I mean Facebook, which really means Twitter. So we're keeping with the code of
either. I swear.
I want to say thank you both, Shannon and John and Steve. For putting together those presentations, I happen to like.
Likewise.
I love passionate debates, and especially, I think with two people that are able to make it about the science and not personal. You know what I mean? Like these two will, you know, it doesn't carry over, and that's the important thing. I think that shows maturity. So, yeah, this is.
I think the world. I love his videos. I'm telling you, if you guys want to learn biology. Go watch his stuff. He actually is one of the reasons I got started reading about biology again. Honestly.
Yeah. So that makes a difference. You know?
Yeah.
Those are the best kind of debate. So this was good. And I think that it was fruitful. And we thank you guys for watching as always. We will be back tomorrow. If you are familiar with Poisoning the Well, Sofane from Poisoning the Well will be on tomorrow with Casey and I and on Ideology. So that's going to be a lot of fun. He is hilarious. If you haven't seen any of his work, go check it out. And we'll see you. Dave, roll that beautiful bean footage.
What is happening?
Roll what? Excuse me?
Yeah, I don't know what anything means anymore.
Have you ever seen Bush's baked bean? Come on, guys. The baked bean commercial?
Doc says it. Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. Big bean fish.
Dave, I just mean take us off the air.
Oh, I can do that. Yes.
Non sequitur, your facts are uncoordinated.